So as well as being the friends of the Western Buddhist order and the friends of the Western Buddhist order, it's also the friends of the Western Buddhist order. There's an emphasis on Western. At least there was initially, or is still initially. Yeah? Yes, in the order, we're committed to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. But we're committed to them under what conditions? In what situation? Well, under the conditions of, in the situation as represented by, modern Western life. We can't pretend that we're ancient Indians. We're not living in 5th century BC Magadha. We're not even living in 20th century Ceylon. We're not living in medieval India. We're not living in Japan. We're not living in Tibet. We're living here in the West. We're living here in Britain. We're living here in England. Huh? And the conditions under which we try to go for refuge, the conditions under which we practice Buddhism and try to follow the spiritual path, are rather different from those under which people have tried to follow that same path in the East, and especially in recent times. Huh? So we have to be aware of this fact. Huh? We can't escape the recognition of this fact that we are trying to practice the Dharma, admittedly the same Dharma, under very different conditions from which people practiced it in the Buddha's time, and very different from what the conditions under which they practice it in many parts of the Buddhist East even today. So this is why we call ourselves the friends of the Western Buddhist order. It's not that we are following a particular kind of Buddhism called Western Buddhism. It's not that we're even trying to adapt Buddhism itself to any particular Western point of view. No, we commit ourselves to the Dharma, the same Dharma that all true Buddhists have committed themselves through the ages. But we have to practice that Dharma, that same Dharma, under very different conditions. And this is what we mean, this is what we indicate by using this term, Western. Of course, more recently, the FWBO has spread to the East, which is rather interesting, because the East, one might say, has been invaded by the West. Even the East has been Westernized. There are many people in Eastern Buddhist countries whose outlook is actually quite Western. And as I indicated earlier on, well, some of those people at least are very intrigued, even very attracted by the particular way in which we present Buddhism and try to live Buddhism, because the conditions under which we're trying to do that in the West are to some extent duplicated in at least some parts of the traditional Buddhist East. Huh? All right, there's a lot more I could say on this score, but perhaps I'd better not, because I seem to be going on at rather some length. Huh? But after all, I'm not reading a paper, I'm giving a talk. So it's not only Buddhist, not only an order, not only Western, there's also friends. Huh? Friends of the Western Buddhist order. So what does this signify? Well, what this signifies is we don't have an ordinary formal membership. Huh? That is to say, you can't join the FWBO just by paying a subscription. You can get our new Buddhist magazine regularly by paying a subscription, but you can't join the FWBO, much less still the Western Buddhist order in that way. So I can remember years ago, I think this was in 1952, I attended a meeting at Sanchi, and I found that an Indian gentleman had newly established, an order of his own, a Buddhist order. And he was going around propagating this order and enrolling members. And he was really doing it in a sort of grand style. He'd equipped himself in a beautiful saffron suit of satin. Saffron trousers, saffron jacket. Now, don't laugh. I mean, we may be wearing these things ourselves one day. And he was going around enrolling members of his sangha. He tried to enroll me. And he told me there were four classes of membership. And of course, the higher the grade of membership, the larger the subscription that you had to pay. There were stream entrant members. there are non-returner members, there are once-returner members, and of course there are arahant members. If you want to be an arahant member, I think it was 500 rupees you had to pay in order to join. Well, some people may do things in that sort of way. But what we felt was, what I felt very strongly was, you couldn't really join a Buddhist movement in that way. You might be able to join a society devoted simply to the study of Buddhism in that way, but you couldn't join a real live Buddhist movement in that way. You could only join a real live Buddhist movement by being actually involved in it. But, and of course, there were different degrees or levels of involvement. So therefore we find that the FWBO is made up of people who are members only, so to speak, in an informal sense, not a formal sense, in a spiritual sense, if you like. First of all, there's the order members, as we sometimes call them, the dharmacharis and dharmacharinis. They are the committed people who committed themselves wholeheartedly, body, speech and mind, to the Buddha, the Dharma and the Sangha. And then we've got the friends, with a capital F. They're the people who are not committed, not yet. They're just interested. They just come along sometimes. Perhaps they come along only once a year to Wesak or to the anniversary of the Friends of the Western Buddhist Order. But they're also part and parcel of the movement. So on the one end you've got the committed, the order members. On the other end you've got the interested, the friends. And in the middle you've got the mitras. We could call them the involved. They're not yet committed, though some of them may be thinking about commitment, but they're certainly more than just interested. So we've got our sort of informal spiritual membership, consisting of the interested, the involved, and the committed. So this is why we speak of the friends of the Western Buddhist Order, and this is the FWBO. So this, again, we may say, is the Buddhist dawn in the West. And it was started, that dawn began, just 19 years ago. And since then, I think I may say that dawn has been gradually growing brighter and brighter. And in the course of those 19 years, all sorts of things have happened. We started off in that tiny basement in Monmouth Street. That's where we were 19 years ago today, practically. But now you'll find large FWBO centres and communities and co-ops in, I think it's at least a dozen countries now. There's nearly 300 order members, a very large proportion of whom are working full-time for the movement in one way or another. We've got double that number of mitras. And if we include India, I think we've got several hundred thousand friends. So quite a lot has happened. We've got communities and retreat centres of a number of different kinds, as you've already heard in the course of the day. I think, for instance, of Vajraloka, our men's meditation centre. I think of Aryaloka, which has been started about a year ago in the United States. I think of our retreat center in India, outside Lonavala, at Bhaja, near those ancient Buddhist caves. I also think of all our publications in the course of the last 18, 19 years. So quite a lot has happened. I'm not going to try even to recapitulate briefly. What I'm going to do is this. I've said something about the events of the first year, of the FWBO's existence, culminating in the first ordinations. I think I'd like to speak now just briefly about what I feel are the main events of the last year, the last 12 months. The three main events, in fact, occurring between, say, April 1985 and April 1986.